Welcome to Corazont Technologies, home of the Digital Executive Podcast. Welcome to the Digital Executive. Today's guest is Rob Cauley. During his 13 years at Microsoft, Rob Cauley led the BI-focused capabilities in Excel and was subsequently one of the founding engineers on Power BI. Through that insider's perspective and experience with Microsoft, Rob developed successful and groundbreaking strategies that can be utilized across almost any industry. A sought-after public speaker and author of the number one selling Power BI book, Rob and his team are relentlessly committed to the new way forward, making P3 a leading consulting firm in the industry, pioneering an agile, results-first methodology that bucks the traditional BI company model. Well, good afternoon, Rob. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
That's awesome, Rob. Glad to be on another podcast today. I think I've done three today, which is exciting. Really want to jump into some of the questions and some of the conversations we were having prior here. I love your journey. You know, you worked at Microsoft for a lot of years as a program manager. You became a chief technology officer, and now you're the CEO of your own company. We know leveraging data is your passion, but maybe you could tell us what made you jump into entrepreneurship.
Well, it's kind of a series of fortunate accidents in a way. When you hear stories about entrepreneurs and startups and things, like the ones that I've always found the most compelling are the ones where the founder or the founders kind of spotted an opportunity in the market. They kind of had advanced notice, or they just sort of like, they had kind of had a microscope on a particular corner of an industry or something like that. You know, those are the ones you sort of like that feel the best, see a need, fill a need type of thing. So I think I got a chance to do something just like that. I think that I got advanced knowledge about 10 years ago of something that was going to change in the world. And it was just a peculiar side effect of my journey in my career. So I had worked on Excel at Microsoft, and I joined Microsoft in 1996, straight out of college. Basically grew up there. Very strange place to grow up, Microsoft. And mostly worked on Excel. And then in the early 2000s, I was recruited in Excel to lead the business intelligence investment, like in Excel 2007. The decision had been made sort of from on high that Excel was going to invest in business intelligence, in BI. And I didn't know what that was. So I had to get a crash course and all of that. But I ended up being in charge of all of that. And it was really an incredibly important and formative experience. And I also got to meet lots of new people at Microsoft. I got to collaborate really closely with like the SQL Server team and the people specifically over on the SQL Server side of the house that were working on business intelligence technologies. And so I learned in that release, I learned two things really in depth. One is that I learned how Excel people, you know, I use that term sort of very glibly, but people who are really good at Excel, I learned that the world of data runs on them, that the most reports are Excel reports. You know, most even dashboards back then were Excel dashboards. And they're cobbled together like in the salt mines by these, you know, the Excel guru in every department of every company in the world. At the same time, I also learned about what I now call the traditional world of business intelligence, the prior era. And that's a lot of big, heavy technology, very heavy server technology, and very heavy projects, huge projects, like projects that were, you would typically estimate a BI implementation to take 18 months, and then it would run for 3 years, and really ambitious. They try to boil the ocean and try to answer every question. And in the end, maybe not ever finish. So I learned a lot about that industry, and also sort of this weird duality of how I couldn't really square these two. Like we had on the one hand, the way that you should do reporting and dashboards and analysis, which is to purchase responsible BI software from a vendor like Microsoft, and then do these big IT-driven projects. And on the other hand, this reality that no one was really like the truth in the trenches was that it was Excel everywhere. And it was almost like our mission was to try to take those Excel people and point them in a different direction and say, hey, you should be going and campaigning for real BI instead. And that was just a job, you know, I took to it. They gave it to me, and I did my best, and I learned a lot. But then I kind of got wanderlust at Microsoft, and I took a different job over the objections of everyone who said this would be bad for my career. I left the Excel team and did something different. And as part of that job, I got to hire a consultant to come in and build me a traditional BI solution. And sort of inadvertently, I got to become a customer of my own stuff. I got to eat my own dog food and participate in being a customer of traditional BI. And it wasn't a lot of fun. It was awful. Like it took several months. It cost a lot of money. And I didn't end up with even half of what I'd hoped to end up with. All right. So that was the second piece of experience. Then the last one was I got recruited in like 2006, maybe 2007, probably 2007, to join this super secret Skunkworks project at Microsoft. It was called Project Gemini. And it was run by the same people that I had met during the Excel days over on the SQL Server side of the house. They had this vision of kind of like uniting these two stories, the Excel analyst story and the traditional BI story, rather than having them in conflict with each other and trying to replace each other. They had this hybrid idea, and I was fascinated. And this ultimately became called Power Pivot, which is the forerunner to Power BI. It's really interesting. I basically spent a full decade of my life studying these very, very, very specific ecosystems, these very specific corners of various industries. And then the crowning touch is that when Power Pivot was sort of getting close to being done, as a test, I said, hey, let me go back and re-implement that project that I paid for in my former job, my previous job, the traditional BI project. The idea was that Power Pivot was supposed to be able to be like 75% as good as the traditional stuff, but like someone like me could execute it without hiring BI pros. And I was blown away. I mean, I can almost pinpoint, I think I can actually, this moment, like at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm working on this project, re-implementing it to see if it'll work. And I just sat back in my chair and realized, this isn't just 75% as good. This is actually better and faster. And I had just done something on my own, sitting in my office by myself in like 20 minutes that I remembered taking about 10 days when we had done it the old way. At that moment, I knew something was going to change fundamentally about the BI industry. We hear the word disruptive thrown around quite a bit with technology. It's just the cool thing. You just call your technology disruptive, even if it's like, you know, a new sketching program. But this one was truly going to be disruptive. And I kind of knew at that moment that this was going to be that one chance in my life where I got advanced knowledge, a head start on a big worldwide industry makeover. And, you know, if I wasn't going to take the leap to bet on that, then I was never going to do anything entrepreneurial. This was sort of the now or never moment.
I love the story. And I think that's where, again, a lot of ideas come at usually 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's where ideas and companies are founded. That's exactly what we're looking for on this podcast. Rob, let me ask you this. As you know, everybody globally has had to make major shifts to adapt to the new normal during this pandemic. Could you maybe share with us what you're doing to adjust and stay relevant in the economy?
Yeah, sure. You know, one of the things that basically the need for BI, whatever you want to call it, everyone's got a different name for it, right? BI, analytics, some people still call it reporting. The need for digested information and quickly digested information, it only ever goes up, the need for it, in times of crisis. And we did this analysis back at Microsoft. Like when we were investing in BI and Excel, we had just come out of like the 1999-2001.com crash where spending in every single IT segment had plunged. Except in BI. It had increased in BI. There's one sector swimming upstream. And then in the 2008-2009 financial crisis, the same thing. Spending plunges in every segment except for BI and for cloud. But that was new then. You know, we didn't have cloud back in 2001. So in some sense, adversity loves BI. You know, so we, if you think about it, it's like, when things are going well, you can kind of sort of like develop these intuitive maps of how to run your business that are just from like trial and error and gut instinct and all those kinds of things. And those things usually aren't necessarily as good as you think they are, but they're good enough to trust them. But as soon as something dramatically and rapidly changes in the world, those maps aren't valid anymore. And so our style of, you know, really up tempo, and that's what we are. You know, we're a professional services firm. We are a consulting firm that helps companies of all sizes execute on BI. So, you know, on the one hand, you know, demand for our services has still been, you know, very strong in the face of all of this, because again, so much change, so much chaos, so much invalidation of the prior maps. We're also kind of fortunate in a way in that our business model, the way we've operated for the past 7+ years, in a way was kind of like COVID ready. Without us ever anticipating a pandemic. It's not like we were pandemic planning 7 years ago. It's more like we knew that to operate, you know, if we circle back to that lightning bolt moment when I'm sitting in my study in 2010, the fundamental observation I had was that the BI industry had forever operated on, in terms of projects, implementing BI projects. The average professional consulting firm that helps implement those projects lives on and is sustained by projects with 6 to 7 figure price tags and incredibly long durations. And they don't do many projects per year. And the thing that I knew that was coming in that moment was that the reason those projects had been so long and so expensive was that the software had been bad. The traditional software, like, you know, and Microsoft's traditional wave of software was part of this problem. We're not, definitely not immune. The traditional software had dictated that the projects had to be executed that way. And it was just multi-billion dollar dysfunction. And so what I saw was that the new way of the world was going to be that there were going to be many, many, many more projects, like orders of magnitude more projects, because the world's need for data is basically, and good digested data, is basically infinite. It's just that when they have a 6 or 7 figure price tag every time and they take 18 to 24 to 36 months, you don't tend to want to buy too many projects like that. Most needs went unaddressed. And so the shift in the industry was going to be from a small number of like whale sized projects to a much, much, much faster tempo of, you know, much more quickly executed projects that still delivered the same value or more as the traditional projects. It's just that they weren't that expensive. They didn't take that long. And so we needed a completely different DNA. And that was the opportunity that I spotted, was that the traditional professional services firms in the BI space were constructed from the ground up to, you know, to use a cliche, to fight yesterday's war. And they're staffed, they're organized, their whole operating model is based around this, you know, small number of really big, expensive projects. And I knew that the world needed a firm that was able to help people execute on this new tempo. And it was interesting, right? It's a challenge, right? Because, like, you know, how do you build a firm that's sort of constantly working itself out of a job rather than parking a whole team, you know, very safely on a revenue generating project for multiple years? And so from the beginning, we knew we had to staff differently. And this again was sort of a happy accident in that we chose, rather than to limit our hiring to a specific geography, rather than form a company that was like built geographically around wherever I happened to be living. Instead, we were going to be a remote company from the beginning. We were going to hire over the internet. We were going to manage over the internet. And we did that so that we could hold the quality bar super, super, super high. We needed a special kind of person. And if you focused on one city, you just were never going to find enough people that were that special. And so I think we have employees in like 14 states because of that. And internally, our internal operations have kind of always been remote. We've been built to operate. Obviously, we see our clients. We used to, before COVID, we used to see our clients, especially in the beginning, we'd see them face to face. But even then, we would conduct, you know, the majority of our work for clients could be conducted remotely and very satisfactorily. And that's how we did it, because that's the least expensive way to do it all the way around. So yeah, I think we sort of lucked into sort of A, being in an industry that was going to be in demand in a time of crisis like this. And B, you know, again, because of the hiring profile we needed, we were forced to go sort of nationwide remote from the get-go.
Now that's amazing. I love the story of how you knew right out of the gate that you knew exactly how the structure of the company was going to be. You're going to be remote. You're going to hire the top talent, and you're actually going to tell your clients, hey, instead of being in here 18 months, we'll be out of here in 3 months, you know, that sort of thing. So totally different shift. And when it comes to the word disruptive, I would say that's truly a disruptive example of how you disrupt. So I appreciate you sharing that, Rob. That's awesome. So Rob, let's talk technology and analytics. A lot of companies tout either their products, how they leverage your data. Could you share with us how your techniques stand above the rest? Is it, you know, again, I know your company's unique, but maybe you could share something on that.
I think there's sort of two parts to this story. One of them is that, I guess, you know, it's not surprising that we've kind of gone all in on the particular tool set that inspired the whole company in the first place, which is the Power BI suite from Microsoft. So part of the story, I suppose, is just kind of what makes Power BI stand apart and why we remain committed to that. You know, I like to say that, you know, Microsoft doesn't pay me anymore. I'm not a patriot for Microsoft. And so if a better tool came along, we're going to use it. It's just that nothing even equal in our evaluation has come along. So part of the question is, hey, what does Power BI do for people that other tools can't? And then the other half of it is, you know, how do we approach that? Do you want to hear both? Do you want to hear one or the other, or in particular order? What would you
both is good. Our audience would like to understand more about both of them, actually.
Okay, let's do Power BI first and I'll try to keep it as compressed as I can. So I think Power BI it's like explicitly a tool that learned from the mistakes of the prior generation, you know, in terms of the software designers. And I was part of that, even though I didn't know back in the day that what we were working on was actually going to be as good as it turned out to be. But yeah, you can sort of see where Power BI retraced sort of a lot of the mistakes of the prior generation. So it really comes down to a couple of things very specifically, because, you know, every product these days, every BI product is capable of producing, you know, slick, interactive dashboards. That's not actually all that difficult from a software engineering perspective to build a product that looks a certain way and it sort of has that touch and feel that's like that. What is really difficult, though, is building the engines that power it, that power the calculations, that power the integration and splicing of different data sources that represent different phases of your business, splicing them together into some unified whole, an expression, a formula language that is both learnable by a wider audience than the previous generation, while at the same time, shockingly complete, meaning no matter how complex or nuanced your particular business logic and situation is, this thing flexes to adapt to it. And so it does have a little bit of an initial learning curve for sure. You know, and again, like we only hire people who are monsters at it. But, you know, once you've sort of crossed a certain threshold with it, it brings an agility and an ability to cope with the rapidly changing conditions and the almost like unfair conditions of the real world in a way that really no other tool that we've seen can do. So it brings an agility and a capability that really, I mean, still to this day is unmatched, while also being incredibly affordable. This is not the licensing cost for this software is anything but break the bank. It's incredibly reasonable. And I think that's, you know, in a nutshell, Power BI, why I thought this tool set, and again, Power Pivot was the thing I was looking at in 2010, but Power BI is absolutely a descendant, a derivative of Power Pivot. It's the same brains under the hood, just in a different package. So that's the platform and why we're believers in the platform. And if someone comes along with a platform that does those things as well or better at a similar price point, number one, I'll be very, very surprised when that happens. But, you know, number two, we're not, you know, we would go and use it. So the other thing is about us, which is when you have the ability and the luxury and also the challenge of starting from scratch, you can do something like this. But, you know, sort of our guiding principle from the beginning has been to embrace this change, not to be seduced by the old business model. In other words, if we look at a project and we can execute it with you in 3 weeks, that's what we're going to do. We are not going to sandbag it. We are not going to try to like pad the hours or anything. We're just not going to do that. Our philosophy from the beginning has been, look, the world is never going to run out of data projects. So if you do just a phenomenal job, just like a magical job, and Power BI lets us do this, I don't think most tools, if any, really can deliver this kind of results. Our goal has been to allow it to shine the way that it's supposed to and deliver to our clients, you know, our partners, that just incredibly magical ROI relative to the previous generation of tools. We never have to do anything with our clients like try to sell them on an infrastructure project that is probably, in most cases, a tremendous amount of over-engineering. We like to bring results to market for you as quickly as possible. So we've really leaned into that. And so what happens is that we're constantly working ourselves out of a job and oftentimes into another, because even though that other project that another vendor, another firm might have charged, you know, $1 million for, and let's say it took, you know, 18 months, if we execute something at a fraction of that price and a fraction of that execution time, that leaves a lot of opportunity. Budget that would have been spent on a single project can now be, you know, we can now execute many, many, many projects for the same company, you know, in the same time frame, you know, and the same budget that you would have only gotten one in the past. It's hard. It is not easy to run a business with that kind of churn. How do you keep consultant utilization percentage, you know, at a profitable, can stay in business, you know, viable level when you're burning through projects at this rate. And it's a problem that the BI consulting industry has never had, because again, they park somebody on a project and they know they're taken care of for the next year and a half. We actually have quite a bit of internal systems that we've developed, you know, both workflows, but also software. And guess what? A lot of Power BI dashboards that allow us to manage this. We call it the Tetris problem. If you've got all these small, odd-shaped pieces of work, how do you get enough of them into the bucket to have the business still work? You know, we were talking about before we started recording, that is the thing that's very difficult to follow. It's not easy for firms to adopt this business model. And they also, again, need to hire a very different breed of individual than what they typically hired in the past. So it's kind of like, we're happy to share our secrets. If, you know, like you mentioned, if I had any trade secrets, I don't have to share them, but our trade secrets are open. Like we'll tell anybody how we operate. We won't necessarily give you our internal systems that we use to manage it, but you know, we're pretty open about how we operate because we need to be. We need to be different. We need to tell people that we're different, and sort of hoarding information in like sort of like a competitive sense doesn't help us.
Interesting. I like that perspective. And you certainly are doing things unconventional, in my opinion. As a chief information officer over the years, I've had to sign the invoices for these companies that were doing these big BI projects for us. And you're right, they're expensive and they were long term. And a lot of times the dashboards that were created or the data lakes that were created out of this weren't even utilized. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's really important. And I hope a lot of people certainly listen in and learn something from this podcast. Rob, this is the big question. Everybody wants to know about Rob, right? Can you share something from your career experience that would be helpful for those looking to grow their career in technology or break into entrepreneurship?
I learned a lot of hard lessons at Microsoft. Most of them were by doing things the wrong way repeatedly until finally, you know, getting it through that there was another way to do it. And one of the things that, you know, after, again, learning the hard way in college, I was a computer science, philosophy, and math major. It kind of tells you everything you need to know about 22-year-old Rob Colley. Oh, the world's an abstract place that you can represent in symbols. And, you know, it's just couldn't have been more wonky computer science than I was. So my advice that I used to give at some point I became a manager at Microsoft and I started mentoring new hires. And so one of the things that I always try to tell people in technology is that by definition, a lot of people who get into technology were good at it. You were good at technology. You've really got to opt in a lot of ways. You sign up to be a computer science major, for instance, or you know, an information technology major or something like that. You're kind of like, in a way, like self-identifying as like, yeah, I'm into tech. And as a result, we tend to focus too much on the tech. So like when we used to design software at Microsoft, and really BI is no different. Like when we're building a dashboard, we're designing software. We're just designing software for a very particular audience at a particular company rather than something like Excel, which is used by the whole world. A really easy habit is to think that when you're building technology is that you focus on the technology. This is going to sound like a cliche in a way, but it's a subtle distinction and it becomes really, really, really important and super valuable if you can break this mindset. So like if you're thinking about, just for example, let's say you're thinking about designing a new app, this will be a good, I think, illustration. The natural human tendency, especially for technology people, is when you're sort of visualizing in your head, you're puzzling over this problem and how it should work. The thing that you're seeing in your head is the technology. You're seeing those data structures under the hood, or you're seeing like the network connections, and you're even seeing like the user interface as you're visualizing it. And when you're thinking that way, you're typically going to build something that is not nearly as valuable as it could have been. When you're visualizing what you're working on, you instead need to focus on the people. You need to should be visualizing instead is the human beings that are going to be using this tool and what their intentions are and what their motivations are, what they're going to be thinking about it. What are the things they need to achieve? You know, again, it sounds obvious. Like, of course, you've got to think about the people. You know, it sounds like I'm not saying anything that significant, but you really do have a choice when you're focusing on building something. You can have the people be dominant in the foreground of your thoughts, or you can have the tech be dominant in the foreground of your thoughts. Can't be both. You need to make it the people. And take it from someone who's learned the hard way. I designed software and technology with a tech dominant perspective, foreground tech, for the first, like, you know, say third of my career at Microsoft. My star didn't really start to rise until I shifted that perspective.
That's amazing. No, I appreciate you sharing that perspective, especially working at such a large organization. you know, you and I being approximately the same age, growing up in that process right through the 90s and the early 2000s and growing our careers as managers, we both went through a lot. And so what you're sharing there certainly resonates probably with a lot of those technologists, managers, executives today that work in technology, not just in technology, but leadership overall. So that was certainly a great piece that you shared with me and the audience here today. So thanks again, Rob. Rob, I'd like to really thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you on today, and I look forward to speaking with you real soon.
Oh, me too. I had a really great time. Great questions. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Bye for now.